Hello there. Welcome to the Africa Rights Talk podcast, a center for human rights podcast series exploring a range of human rights issues through conversations with academics, practitioners, and activists. I am your host, Victoria Amechi. Let's dive in. Hello guys, welcome to this episode of Africa Rights Talk. I'm Victoria, your host, and here with the doctoral candidate, Nedai Majin, and we're going to talk about the upcoming elections in South Africa. Can you please introduce yourself and the job work that you do?
Thank you, Vicky, and greetings to your viewers. As you've rightly introduced me, my name is Nedai Shilbert Majin. I'm a doctoral candidate here in the Center for Human Rights, this Pretoria. The work that I do focuses on the work of the African Union, the RECs, the regional economic communities, and their role they play in advancing credible elections. So essentially, I'm a governance and election scholar, was looking at the regional mechanisms, how they intersect with the support that the AU and the RECs give to electoral process.
South Africa has a declining voter registration, and people are kind of skeptical about the ability of the government to deliver things like employment, there's a lot of job scarcity, there's a lot of issues of corruption, for security. How do you think this possible for campaigning for this election? How do you think we can restore the faith?
As you have rightly asked in the question, since 1994, actually, it's been a regression in terms of voter participation among populations of Africa. The youth are not registering to vote or participating in the vote because they've lost faith in political parties. So the challenge is that the youth find themselves between the rock and hard surface. They are met with no option. Either it's with the ruling African National Congress, or it's with the alternative political parties. So that poses a challenge in decision-making. The political landscape is not giving enough options for the young people to be drawn towards participating in the electoral process. So when they're met between, when they find themselves between the rock and hard surface, they opt to be indifferent to the electoral process. So so this calls to say the current breed, the quality of political players does not speak to the young people in essence. That's why they are not voting. Both are extremes. It would be extreme. The ruling national African National Congress is extreme in doing something that the youth are not pleased, whereas the alternative that is much of the young population inclined towards the EFF. Mm-hmm. I also think that the EFF at this stage has not managed to harness to appeal to every young the youth. Mm-hmm. Maybe from my interactions with young people, they're seen as very extreme on the other side. So we are met with two extremes that is not attracting the young people to vote itself. So there is need for political players to find a halfway house to move the young people so that they are drawn towards the desire to participate in electoral processes. So hence, we have experienced this decline for years.
And it's so sad that we are experiencing this decline. At the same time, we've seen the importance of the participation in important milestones for our country. So do you think this political party is put things in place rather to ensure that this use into at least the exercise of that right?
Thank you for that. There have been lead to or some effort from political parties during the voter registration processes. Some political parties were moving door to door, meeting the youth in public places, encouraging them to vote, to register to vote. And that does not translate into voting. So registering to vote is one thing, and actually voting itself is one thing. So I do not also think that they've done enough in their political manifestos to accommodate the needs of young people in their complexities. So, and also if you look at the candidates for National Assembly, even for local governments, the numbers of the youth are still very low. So the youth are inclined to vote when the youth are participating as office bearers. So when that landscape changes, when there's a dramatic shift from recycling old political game by moving from recycling old political players with introducing new faces in the political scene, where you give a youth a voice, where you give a youth a platform, that could actually perhaps lead to rising numbers of the youth participating in the voting process itself. So I do see that the numbers are still significantly low. So we may likely to see that the youth may not participate as envisaged. But however, of course, the IEC did a good job. There were so many voter registration campaigns, the information was shared adequately. I think those were good attempts. Credit must also be given to ICPC.
Mm-hmm. Using the manifestos of the ANC, using the manifestos of the across the nation, and it's continued a lot of enticing, let's say, promises and what have you. And it seems like people are not even persuaded by that.
Yeah.
So how do you think this political party or this government can balance that indifference with making the goals that they put on their manifestos seem realistic to the people?
So it's within the nature of political parties to sell. This is a mistake that political parties not only select, but also wanted to do. They oversell in order to attract voters. Mm-hmm. But the era of overselling political promises or manifesto is gone. This worked in the old generation, in the 90s, in the 2000s, early 2000s. We're in an era of information and technology, AI, advancement of various communications tools and stuff. So it's not in their best interest to oversell, but to realistically sell, because if whatever the political parties sell remains online, the young people are going to be always looking at these things. They remember them. They are always to be interacting, and they are also young people who are forming various groups to monitor. Even here in the Center for Human Rights, we have a project that will be monitoring how ruling parties or winning political parties in elections are implementing the promises of the manifestos. So the era of propaganda or of overselling is gone. So it is in their best interest to sell what is realistically attainable. Now they are also facing serious challenges, particularly the ruling ANC has been overselling promises since democracy. And some of those things, in even the recent years where we experienced the COVID-19, where we experienced the nation has been experiencing economic challenges, decline in there are no jobs for young people to, they fail to create enough jobs for young people to. So now when they come and say, we are promising young people jobs, young people are going to say, but in the previous elections, you promised jobs, but you did not deliver jobs. So it's going to be very hard. And now we have tools to track
the implementation
of manifestos. So at this stage, I think, thanks to technology, it's exposing political parties, it's keeping them on their feet so that they don't oversell. So in this case, it is in the best interest of any political party to sell what is realistically attainable, considering also the country's economic growth, the nature in which the country is rising, and also its challenge, unique contextual challenges. I think that's could be something that is acceptable among young people.
Very well, thank you for that. 2024 was a very eventful year for most countries, very important elections that happened in some countries. And And South Africa happens to be one of those countries with the smartest 30-year democratic rule, and alongside the one of the major elections this year. And it's been a lot of worldwide and regionally, it's been a lot of challenges when it comes to democratic ethos. And some countries are experiencing those challenges. And South Africa, people are looking, I think, towards South African elections as a blueprint for their own major elections. What do you think could be the impact of the process and outcome of South Africa's election to other countries? And what do you think this is going to drawn from how it has been so far?
So as you frankly said, this year is 2024 is a very unique year. More half the world is voting.
Yeah.
Major democracies or major states, big and small, they are voting. And South Africa is one of major one unique democracy in the African continent, but also society. It's a democratic process of electing selecting leaders. So it marks 30 years since 1994, and the election day, 29th May, coincide with that particular day, where I think it's very symbolic. Whatever the outcome might be, symbolic that the people must accept it, because it's them that they've gone to the polls and select leaders. One good benefit that we have in South Africa with strong institutions, particularly the Independent Electoral Commission with the courts, and also we have still a function of state institutions. So we are guaranteed whatever the outcome of the election could be, there is some form of conceding among the losers. But most importantly, I think the world is watching, Africa is watching how this process that marks 30 years of democracy will teach other Africans. Should the ruling ANC get less than 50%, which are predictions of many, what will be the reaction? Will it be like to have a coalition government? Will this democracy give an example of working together for different political actors with different ideologies and different approaches to politicking? So certainly it's a very symbolic year. It's a year that if it goes well, and South Africa would have laid an example in the African continent. If it goes well without violence, without excessive violence, and also without human rights violations in the process, South Africa would have demonstrated maturing democracy, that it's a maturing democracy. So there are lessons for other African countries to learn from this particular thing. How are they going to handle it, considering that there's so many issues at stake in the political landscape? Will the outcome be acceptable? And if it is acceptable, how is the outcome going to unify the nation, which will be lessons for other African countries to impress for a maturing democracy? And these 30 years, if it goes well in terms of the democratic election process, we will not consider South Africa a young democracy anymore. It will be a maturing democracy. So So indeed, it's going to be a very big win for the nation in sport.
Globally, there's been a rise in disinformation, misinformation about the African world, whether elections, whether AI, with education. Every sector kind of has to deal with misinformation, and the electoral processes are no different from the exceptions. So how do you think Africa can deal with this curve or contain misinformation and ensure that there's a credible electoral process? How might a credible electoral process impact political, or social, and economic tensions already within the nation across the different countries?
So to start with the question about fighting disinformation, I think it's a global pandemic. All countries are trying to fight disinformation. But the most important thing that is a blessing in South Africa is the IEC is very efficient. They update on their website. If they work influence the civil society. So the civil society can actually say society is very vibrant in South Africa. Particularly, I've been attending meetings amongst CSOs who are working on election reform, among other things, mm-hmm. and they work closely with the IEC. So the IEC is very quick to respond and provide accurate information. As well as CSOs, some of them, it's part of their work to provide correct information around the elections. I mean, we have our information expression unit here. It's also part of its mandate also is to promote correct dissemination of information. So we have institutions and we have the IEC, we have the CSOs. That could combat information. Also, in some instances, South African Police Service do provide accurate information. Let's assume there's an issue that is reported that there was violence, where there was no violence, for example, there's some odd clip that's circulating, the police can confirm that this is not a true, for instance. So I think some of the institutions are very functional, and it's a big win for combating disinformation. And also, yeah, people are able to verify Twitter handles for various institutions, IEC and stuff, Facebook page. They're credible sources that young people and people rely on news media. They are able also to verify. And also media houses are also very good to verify some offline information, whether it's authentic or not and stuff. And the last part is to say the attention that is rising up. There are two things involved here. There are existing tensions between South Africa and some nation states. And there are also tensions building up after the recent developments of the ICJ. There's a mass war and tensions. So So these tensions, they are also found in the context of election. So it is irresponsible for political parties to fuel such tensions because it's not in the best interest of South Africa to have tensions with other nation states. It's the UN Charter, even the African Charter promotes friendly relations among states. So it's an African as pure to look at African values and trying to charter and stuff to fuel such tensions. But it's also within the nature of politicians to use tensions for political gain. So I think it takes right citizenship, right-minded citizens, and civil society to call out political parties who do such and expose them. And interrogate them, and instead of them using that narrative for political gain, they must actually use political gain because you cannot have a government that is deceitful. See a scenario such happens, and then we, as writers, as scholars, academics, we get interrogated, expose the deceitfulness. We can have webinars with society, we can have advocacy. It would be sad if political parties try to ride over some existing tensions for political gain, but rather they should perhaps use this opportunity to show how they can be how can they use the existing situation to the benefit of the nation as the next government or government in waiting. Whether it's for the ruling or alternatives. So that's my views or opinions about it. So actually,
it comes to the end of this podcast, and I don't know if you have any concluding remarks and what South Africa should be looking for in elections going forward.
So this election comes at a very critical time when South Africa is marking the democracy. I was moving around the University of Pretoria, talking to first-year students, the majority of which that report. It's an election that marks a maturing democracy where most of the youths are left out. Much work was not done to promote voter registration, voter education, civic engagement. The aspect of civic engagement is lacking to engage the citizens about this important right. It's lacking. This election is also critical at this stage where there's a plurality of political parties, a rise of small and emerging political parties causing complexity in the political landscape. It's also a test to the South African democracy. So this election is testing whether the democracy is maturing or is going to regress. So it is an interesting time, it is an important time, because we cannot have a democracy that is not tested. So the fact that it's appearing with the even emergence of the NK party in the KwaZulu-Natal, it's important for a democracy to be tested. So for us to learn, to have good lessons on this particular democracy, it must be tested, it must be go through some blast furnace. It must be
you put iron through fire.
It must go through some fire so that we truly believe it is. So it's a maturing democracy. We should expect anything to happen. People are doing scenario mapping. We can expect maybe the ruling party to return government slightly above 50%. We can expect a coalition government, which many believe there will be a coalition government. We can also expect, given the tensions that are arising, the geopolitical thing, we can also expect some more tensions in the coming to the election, maybe some violence as well, that may affect vulnerable groups. So, early warning signs about conflict tension, we should be very much aware, because it's a very tense, highly competitive election. I think since democracy, it's a highly competitive election. So we can expect anything, but most importantly, we have no room to expect the worst. We always, as human beings, expect the best out of the process here.
Thank you so much. It was lovely to have you on the podcast, and this is a very insightful conversation, and we look forward to a peaceful election outcome. Thank you for that.
Thank you,
Vicky. I have just listened to the Africa Rights Talk podcast. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. Do not forget to subscribe to our YouTube channels, social media platforms such as Twitter and Instagram. Thank you for listening.